Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
Hi, it's Caroline Stanbury, and you're listening to Andy's Girls.
Already losing my mind. It's so early. We're seconds in and there's a lot to say. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 125 and it's Thursday night and I just put on a face mask halfway through OC that I was supposed to take off, but I couldn't because I couldn't stop watching The Vision that was this week. Anyway, there's so much happening on this week's Andy's Girls. First off, I had the pleasure and the joy and the privilege of sitting down with Her Holiness, Caroline Stanbury, of Ladies of London, for a chat, which you guys are going to hear in just a minute. Or like, who are we kidding? 800 minutes. So much to say. I have to tell you, I know that Ladies of London has come up on Andy's Girls before, and it's probably for the reasons that I discussed with Caroline, which is, while there is slash was hashtag I think rest in peace Real Housewives of Cheshire, there was a UK-based Housewives. I, from day one of starting to watch Real Housewives, I'm already calling it Real Housewives of London, but from day one of watching Ladies of London, I felt like it was the perfect London Real Housewives. And I don't know the reasons why it wasn't called Real Housewives of London. I talked to Her Holiness about that in our conversation, which was phenomenal. But it felt really perfect for the Bravo canon. Now, it lasted 3 seasons. God bless America. If you Google hard enough, you can find the full series illegally uploaded online. And let me just tell you, I watched all of season 3, which was, I believe, 11 episodes in 24 hours. And if I'm being completely serious and completely dead honest, it was far less than 24. because I wanted a refresher. I wanted to like remember stuff with Sophie, Adela, Juliet, Oy Vey, so Julie, Mapperton. There was a lot that I wanted to just like refresh myself about before I spoke with Caroline. But the interesting thing is Caroline is in that small group, I would say, of people that became famous, certainly to those of us in the States and outside of the UK and potentially, I don't know, Europe. I don't know. You guys are so fancy and cool. But Caroline is in that group of people that to me sort of rose above their actual Bravo show. And it felt like from episode one of Ladies of London, she just like goddamn shot out of the cannon and it was her show. And whether or not you agreed with some of the decisions she made and some of the fights, she really was the star of that show. And since the show went off the air, which again, it shouldn't have because it was great. And season three was like fucking fantastic. Since it went off the air, she's still been able to do other work. She stays in the news. She's incredibly responsive to fans online. You guys should be following her on everything. And she breaks news, you guys, about an American tour, you say? Perhaps a new reality show, you say? There's a lot that she's working on, and I think the reason is because she is in that group. Now, noting that she's not on a currently airing Bravo show, it's hard to say like who exactly joins her on that tier, but I think she has fantastic face and name recognition. She has an unbelievable personality. She's whip smart. She's so funny. She's incredibly quick. And it's hard to say like who from the Bravo world you would put her on the same tier with. I just think for me personally as a Bravo, I mean, you know, a bad guest host, so I don't know. That's my own PhD, which stands for something different than what Kelly said on Watch What Happens. But from my kind of place in the Bravo sphere as a Bravoholic, she is in that top tier to me because she feels so uniquely herself. And I feel like that's the goal in what we want in a Real Housewife or a Bravo celebrity. We want something different than we've seen before, but also we want something real because we've seen stuff that's been different. But if a person is intending to position themselves as different for the purposes of becoming, I don't know, a Bravo superstar, that's not so much for me, unless like what they're doing is insane. And then I will give them credit for being completely insane, but not giving them like real credit for being good BCC Aviva Drescher and her leg at Le Cirque. So anyway, all things Caroline Stanbury coming up in just a second. But you guys, holy fucking shit. An embarrassment of riches. First off, the last 24 hours, the Jersey and Atlanta trailers have come out. My God. Now, if you listen to the episode with Dave Quinn, I think that was 123, you know that both trailers were due almost any day. And Dave said that on the episode, and I was like, holy shit, I couldn't believe that Atlanta was coming out this quickly. And he was like, yeah, Atlanta's coming out. Jersey's coming out really, really, really soon, like in a matter of days. And I got a lot of responses from listeners who said, no, there's no way Atlanta's coming out. You know, they just went on the trip, blah, blah, blah. Then Kenya announces her divorce. And I'm thinking, oh my God, if they were planning to release the Atlanta trailer, surely they're going to re-edit it to make sure that they get the announcement of Kenya's divorce in there, which they've done before with other trailers where they really, really pull from the headlines. But it felt like they didn't even really need to. Because looking at that trailer, sure, they might have done a little zhuzh, but it seems like they definitely had material with Kenya and Mark Daly, you know, having a rough go of it, and Kenya maybe talking to a divorce attorney or somebody, who the fuck knows. But it seems like that was something that they knew that they were going to use this season. And God bless them for gracing us with that on top of New Jersey. It felt so insane. P.S., spoiler alert. Her Holiness Candy just announced that she's expecting her third kid with a surrogate. So mazel to her. Mazel to Shamari DeVoe for putting out a statement saying she chose to leave the show when I honestly had forgotten she was ever on it. So kudos to you. I felt like the Atlanta trailer was unbelievable. Kenya versus Eva, phenomenal. Nini actually possibly potentially crying real tears when she's forced by production to have a conversation with Cynthia that includes, I don't know, discussing your feelings. Phenomenal. The weird, crazy sexual escapades thing that comes up with Cynthia that I do not believe is an actual storyline, but okay, we'll go with it. Phenomenal. The production photo of the cast where they're all in black and gray and it is sultry and it is dark and it is commanding and it is moody and it is dramatic and it is just perfection. When they just released the cast photo of the women for season 12, I literally died. This is the ghost of Sarah talking right now. I couldn't believe it. First up, the best cast photo of all time. And also, if this is an indicator of how the season will go, unbelievable. P.S. Have I even mentioned Portia? Portia and Dennis on camera, whatever the fuck he did, if he really cheated or emotionally cheated, you know, a la Jimmy Edmonds or whatever the fuck he did. All in for watching all of that. Didn't even see the moments, because I think they're being honestly probably filmed a lot of it now, of Portia and Kenya coming together, which we know happens on this vacation. I think they're in Greece or something right now, because one of them posted a photo of their babies together in strollers or whatever, like the next generation, like Degrassi, which I have never once seen, but I'm going to pretend I understand. It just looks impeccable. And I have to say, so does motherfucking New Jersey. First off, Joe saying, and the cast disgusting, and the kids crying about the fact that Joe is definitely being deported. I thought they were going to stretch that out a little bit, because until fairly recently, I thought that they were all still fighting for him to be released and be back with his family. And it's, of course, they absolutely were, but I didn't realize how honest they were going to be about the fact that the chances were incredibly slim at this point that he's coming back. And he's even asked, you know, I think it was this week, he's asked to be shipped by ICE back to Italy. And then if he's allowed back, he's asking them to like help him come back or whatever. But he's done with the detention center. He would like to be out of a cage, please. So I was just really surprised by that. I don't know about this whole treating Gia like a junior housewife of Jersey. It feels like a lot. I don't know how I feel about this is a mix of production and plot, but I don't know how I feel about Gia and Frankie going to prom. It feels very produced. But, you know, they are both beautiful, wonderful children, so maybe not. I don't know. Gia and Tree talking about, you know, Gia saying, like, don't talk shit about my dad in front of me. He's my dad. He's your husband. Deal with it. Very impressive. She is, of course, a mature, intelligent, wonderful woman, young lady, whatever, college freshman. I don't know. The kids stuff makes me uncomfortable, and she's grown up in it, I guess. So she gets it. And well, I mean, if you're going to be on camera, you might as well defend yourself. So why not? Obviously, that was not the darkest moment of the trailer. The darkest moment of the trailer and hopefully the season, because how can it get darker? Jackie and her father and her dad, who looks fascinating, saying that her almost dying was almost worth it because now she's thin, except she was anorexic. So like, and she still lives with anorexia in the sense that, you know, your body image is like a day-to-day process. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's recovering. And for him to just say that to her as an adult, and wasn't she like with a kid at the time too? I forget. I think they were like on a couch or something. That was, you know, rough, tough stuff. That was intense and gross and disgusting and disturbing. And the scariest part is, like, you know, he actually feels that. I don't think that was a slip of the tongue. My God, really. Unbelievable. Melissa talking about having a kid because she has officially run out of plot. Like, envy has been done. Family anger stuff has been done. The book has been done. The pop star has been done. All that's left is another kid. I mean, didn't they get angry at Tree for pretending that she wanted to have like a little boy with Joe? But maybe that was actually because they were upset that she was talking to press about it and not them. I don't know. Who's to say? And P.S., we haven't even talked about Melissa. We haven't even talked about Margaret getting her fucking weave pulled out, which is such a throwback. at a boutique by, you guys know who it was, because I talked to Margaret Josephs about it. So listen to the Bravoholics episode. I'm not even going to tell you who it is, except, spoiler alert, you know who it is. Who could it be? The person that was asked to leave, and she didn't even have her like full-time bag of trash to hold in the opening credits. My God, so amazing. I feel like we are and should be feeling so blessed and so grateful right now to the fine folks at Bravo HQ, because I genuinely think these were two really strong trailers that look like those are going to be really strong seasons. And what I like about Jersey and Atlanta, however many seasons in they are, I think Atlanta's 12, I forget, Jersey, maybe 11, I don't remember, 10-ish, I don't know, is that they are uniquely themselves. And Bravo did a great recast with Margaret, with Jen Aiden. What, love them or hate them, and how could you ever hate Margaret but Jen? Love them or hate them, they have been really, really great for plot, for the friction with the ladies, for adding some chemistry that's really important, and some tension that's really important, and some stressful moments, which is really important. It feels like it's not old Jersey. You know how like New York, you can feel like, oh, this feels like old New York again, and it's great. Jersey is never going to be the way it was at the beginning, because these women are not the housewives that they were when the show first started. And nor should they have to be if their lives have changed and they've become celebrities, and there's no way not to deal with that. Like, Teresa's a shell of the person that she used to be, but she's also been through an enormous amount, no matter what you think of her. And it just feels like Jersey opened up an incredible new chapter this season, and they are continuing with a new one now. And it feels vibrant and, you know, weird and trashy, which is how Jersey can be. I mean, you know, it's Jersey. And Atlanta feels really powerful and dynamic and dramatic. And Kenya and Eva, I just really can't get enough. I feel like that is going to be a fucking, I don't know, Sharknado, Shark versus, I don't know, whatever the hell those shark movies do. The Air, I don't know, a storm. Well, a storm is brewing in both of those franchises, and I'm really excited about it. So listen, we got to talk about the franchises that aired this week, because I just rewatched them. And spoiler alert, I think they were all great. I mean, I guess we'll start with the weakest link of the three, which I would say is Dallas. And I don't think that is a spoiler for anybody, because if you watched it, you would see that it was kind of weak. And what I felt like while watching Dallas is that there were a lot of similarities between Dallas and Orange County. And I felt like there were a lot of similarities, no disrespect, but a lot of similarities between Brandy and Kelly. And I know that Kelly, there's a lot going on with Kel, with the Kelster, which we'll get to, but it felt like they both have two things in common. First off, they both do their very best to instigate a reaction. And then once they get one that they don't like, they're somehow shocked. Which, what? And Bronwyn said on Orange County that she thinks Kelly does that as a defense mechanism, that I'm going to poke at the bear, or the person that I think is a bear, before the bear goes after me. And I don't know how accurate and true that is. I really don't. But it felt like with Brandy, even when they were doing the, you know, Brandy's talking about, oh, I've been called trash before, and they showed the little flashback to when Cam called her trash before, and it was like, cool, but you were like holding up that dildo, and it was because you were like chasing her with it. So there was a reason that this person used some words, whether or not they were accurate. It also felt like there was a similarity between them, because it appears that Brandy and Kelly both grew up and were taught that money was a sign and an indicator of, to use Kelly's new favorite word, accomplishment. And I'm saying that noting that Brandy never had it, because she grew up, as she said, in a trailer home, trailer, you know, situation. And like the Boxcar Children, while Kelly says that she did and does, which does she? But in both cases, to me, they're wrong. Obviously, we know that money doesn't make you a good person. I think Kelly seems to be confusing money and power. And while money obviously can open doors and can give power to like access. That doesn't make you successful. And P.S., when you talk about how much money you have and how many homes you have and or had, and you're doing it in order to slay a stay-at-home mother who's the caregiver for three kids, whose husband it has like cheated on her, and they're in the process of getting a divorce, and you're saying that you have all this money and these homes, I mean, congrats for graduating from college, but I'm guessing she got some help from her millionaire husband. I would love to see the deeds on those 10 houses. I assume she no longer owns them because she doesn't, you know, live in one now. But it felt gross and grotesque, but, you know, we'll get there. It just was kind of interesting to me because it felt like there were some similarities between these women who in many other ways are diametrically opposed. So I watched Dallas twice, as I do every, I watch every show, as you guys know, twice, at least. Once I do it kind of for myself, but that also means that I give it like 40% attention. I miss a lot. And the second time I really, really watch so that I have an understanding of exactly what happened. And the first time I watched Dallas, I was like, this is not great. And the second time I watched Dallas, I was like, it's better than how I thought it went down, but it wasn't terrific. What to say? Deandra, to me, came off the worst, although I did appreciate her homage to Luann in Mexico with that fall, albeit in terrific-looking Spanx. Which, I mean, Spanx can't be part of the joke because we wear them all the time, don't we? I'm wearing some now. No, I'm not. It was interesting to me that Deandra tried to drunkenly, forcefully coerce Carrie and Leanne, which I guess worked, to talk in front of the group about their issues and not privately. It was interesting that a person can throw a napkin in someone else's face and then 30 seconds later say that other person is acting like trash, which, excuse? I actually didn't mind anything that Leanne said, but what was more devastating to me was Stephanie talking about how Leanne triggered her, and when prompted by the producer said something along the lines of like, I can't tell people how I feel because they don't want to be around someone who doesn't feel and appear good, and I wouldn't have any friends. My fucking God, that was a lot. First off, Stephanie's dealing with triggers all over the place. She's dealing with triggers from fans who are reaching out to her having watched last season. So she's like probably getting bombarded with a lot of people talking about their mental health journey and maybe asking her questions and looking for support. And as she said, she's not a doctor. She's not a, you know, provider of that kind of care. And it's also triggering to her because she's on a day-to-day process with her mental health journey. And I think she's scared a lot of people. And I don't mean this as in any way a critique, but I think that she has alarmed people by appearing so vulnerable. And I think that is a huge sign of her bravery and courage. She put something on Instagram. Did she do that today? She did it a couple hours ago. That says, to love yourself is to understand that you don't have to be perfect to be good. I wanted to take a minute to thank each and every one of you for the love, support, and kindness you have shown me. During filming, I was going through a deep depression that I was trying to dig myself out of. I want you to know that I'm better now and taking care of myself through medication, therapy, exercise, and meditation. I have dealt with depression and anxiety since I was a young child, and I understand that it is something I'll probably deal with for the rest of my life. However, I know that my mental health journey does not define me or diminish my value as a person. If you are struggling, I hope you know that you are not alone, and I hope you realize that you are worthy, loved, and more than enough. And then she thanks her hairstylist and some people and Travis for going with her to watch What Happens, which I haven't watched yet, actually. I'll do that as a reward after this. So shout out to Stephanie. I mean, I think she's just being so open and so vulnerable, and she's probably learning a lot about herself if she's watching the show. Obviously, no judgment if she's not, noting that it can be a trigger. And I think she's, you know,
there are some points about the differences in how she and Leanne are expressing their own mental health journeys. I don't think that Leanne is necessarily using her past as an excuse, but I do think she's using it as a wall. And it seems like that's going to come up in next week. And I'm sure it's going to continue to come up at press. And, you know, she and Stephanie are really different people, but I can really appreciate the fact that they've bonded in past seasons over their, you know, attempts at taking their own lives and really in an understanding of how far they've come in their journeys and also how they handle things today. You know, they both got some work to do, as does, by the way, everybody in this fucking world. And how brave are both of they to both of them to talk about it on the show. Caitlin Brodnick, guest from last week. If you're listening to Andy's Girls, please turn it off for 10 seconds because, oh, you know what? There's some feedback. I think the episode is done. You should maybe stop listening. Listen, you guys, she was completely wrong about saying that Carrie is a wonderful new addition to the show. I just want to say that. I will continue to say that. However, I didn't mind her this week. I don't know. Maybe it was because OC was so fucking amazing that I was in a state of almost duress and maybe was confused and bewildered. But, you know, they fucked up by not having Carrie 1 still on the show in some capacity. I guess maybe she'll cameo or whatever. I don't know. But Carrie 2.0, I thought, did a nice job of using new words to help Randy, you know, who was really riding the struggle bus, and kind of just being a pal. And again, maybe that, you know, I said that it was so weird because she sort of stuck out and I didn't see any real chemistry with her and everybody else. Maybe she and Brandy will develop some because they've become so close, at least in the last like couple hours that we've seen on camera. So again, she wasn't my pick, but I actually thought she did a pretty good job this week. Potomac. Really, it feels like, honestly, part two of the reunion was setting up for part three. I don't know. It feels there were some good moments. I mean, Candace talking about the fact that she couldn't act, quote unquote, like she was from the hood because she grew up in a literal country club community, which was so elitist and classless. She and Kelly should go to lunch. The backstage editing with the guys versus Michael was so shady. He deserved every second of it. I guess Andy said something on Radio Andy today about how Andy himself had receipts that comes out on part three or something. Thank you to the listener who sent, who shared that with me. Curious as to what that is. Has Michael grabbed Andy's butt? Not spreading that rumor here, but look at where I go. I don't think that's what happened, but fascinating to see how that will go down in part three. It felt like it was, there was other stuff that happened, other arguments. Giselle and Karen, fantastic. Candace versus, I guess, everybody, fantastic. But it felt like the, you know, 600-pound elephant in the room was Michael. There was a lot of talk about Michael, and there needed to be a lot of talk about Michael. The fact that Michael called Juan to tell Robin to shut the fuck up, like, what? That felt like a strange, interesting process. Maybe you shouldn't do these things or something. The fact that the women were so ardently vocal about saying, Ashley, what he did was disrespectful to you, and Ashley's response is to be so tight-lipped and seemingly deeply afraid of defaming him in some way that she's trying to turn it on the guy that made the accusation because Michael's like a well-known 60-year-old whatever in wherever the fuck. I mean, spoiler alert, all of the women on the cast are much more well-known than Michael. And while he might have, I don't know, money in the bank, this person hasn't filed a civil lawsuit to my knowledge about that and was potentially so uncomfortable about the attention that he refused to work with the prosecutors, which is possibly one of the reasons why they said that they didn't have enough evidence to prosecute Michael. It's like, what the hell? I mean, he grabbed asses during the Andrew night. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Like, Ashley is pretending that reality isn't happening in front of her. And then she is trying to defame people who are like, no, this is real. And she's trying to spin the truth, or she just sits there stone faced. And it's like, sweetie, this is going to happen with or without you. I guess it's, we're going to try to see how it happens with you pretending it can happen without you, because for some crazy fucking reason, you and Michael have decided to be uber quiet or let him be the aggressor, as we've seen in the clip for next week. You know, she said on this housewife tour that she's on that they're trying desperately for baby number two. And it's like, is that why you're being so fucking quiet? Like, what conversation did you have with Michael? And why it feels worse that she can't acknowledge that he humiliated her, obviously, which is brought up by Candace's Chris next week. There's something to be said for the fact that he like giggled and was whatever the fuck he said next. Like, the guy didn't just brush up against someone going through a crowd and then say, I'm sorry. He acknowledged that the way he behaved was inappropriate because there's an audio recording of it and he's giggling about it. If I just walk, I know everybody's different. We're all like special precious flowers, but if I just walk into somebody in a tight space, I don't giggle about it unless something has happened that elicits a giggle and I'm nervous and I feel awkward or whatever. If I totally, honestly, accidentally brush my hand up against somebody's whatever, I'm going to say, I'm sorry. I'm going to acknowledge exactly what that area was and my, I'm going to react like somebody who genuinely is apologetic for what was a complete accident. The fact that Ashley is saying he doesn't have to apologize to me for dragging me through this process and making me like fucking Elliot Spitzer's wife stand there, sit there during the Fox 5 interview and whatever else, and just be a quiet wife and ultra supportive at all costs. It just reads as really false to me. And my question is, does she know that he has groped this man? Because we all know he has. And I ask that as a poll to AG listeners on the gram. It's where, you know, all good business is done. And I asked essentially, that's a fun new word, but it feels like it applies. I asked, do you think Ashley believes Michael? 16% said yes, 84% said no. And I also asked, do you think Michael has groped other producers? And in this poll, 98% said yes, and 2%. So I guess Ashley's been looking at my social, as has some intern or maybe her mom. 2% said no. I mean, it feels like, you know, she knows, we know, she knows deep in her core. It'll come out when she has her Oprah aha moment and like one-on-one with Andy when they ultimately get divorced or whatever happens. It's going to be a divorce. Who are we kidding? It reads as false. And because she's been the bone collector, because she's has in the past anointed herself as the girl that gets at the truth and calls out bullshit, the fact that she cannot even acknowledge, if she could just acknowledge that without feeling like he was going to become, you know, the face of a civil case or potentially something with Bravo. I don't even think it would be Bravo because they know that he did it. But the fact that she can't even acknowledge that it's embarrassing, like, that is strange to me. It's embarrassing. Even if you really didn't believe that your husband did this, even though we have proof that he did, it would be fucking embarrassing. And the women talking about their spouses saying that if they had done something inadvertent or whatever, that they would owe their spouse an apology is completely accurate and correct. I don't know. I can't wait for next week. I felt like it was a nice amuse-bouche. Potomac's had, you know, one of the best seasons of all time. And I'm so appreciative to them. And that's kind of all there is to say about it. I know you guys sent me a bunch of satchels about Potomac and I'll answer them on the gram after this ep goes up. But we have to talk about Orange County. Holy fucking shit. So first off, several people, including T. Kyle, talked about how incredible that episode, this week's episode, was going to be. And I was like, okay, great. Because, you know, you hear that a lot from, not from T. Kyle, but from people. You hear people saying, oh, this is going to be great. Oh, that's going to be great. And sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. But I knew going in, because of what people were saying online that had seen a screener of the app, that it was probably going to be pretty good. Then I spoke to a friend who shall remain nameless, even though he listens to the podcast, who said, it's not good. It's stupid. And I was like, don't tell me exactly what happened, because you guys know I don't watch live, because it makes me too anxious.
And he was like, it's not great. And I was like, really? But then I started watching the episode and I was like, I guess it's not going to be great. And you guys, it was fucking tremendous. Now, I know the bar in OC, like it was in Beverly Hills, could not be any lower. But I would say, honestly, sincerely, and I think completely correctly, that this week's episode of Orange County was one of the best episodes of any franchise of the last several years, because there were so many fucking plots. And that is the kind of jam-packed craziness that a viewer aspires to watch. You don't want one big fight. You want like 6 to 10 big fights and some funny things happening. That is a dream ep. And it felt like it was like a great symphony. It was everything happening at once. And I also watched the ep, and then I watched the after show because T. Kyle told me it was going to be crazy, and it fucking was, of Meghan McCain and Kelly Dodd on Watch What Happens. I watched the after show before I watched the show because I heard the after show was in fact more crazier than the episode itself. And spoiler alert, it completely fucking is. The single craziest point might be when Meghan makes a joke about... when Kelly makes a joke about Meghan's deceased father, John McCain, by saying she has a PhD, as in Papa has dough. My God, the audience, I think, gasped. It was awkward. The audience was filled with Kelly's friends from Arizona. So if they're not pretending to laugh, there's a problem there. And it sort of made me think, Kelly is one of these people who like thrives in attention, on attention rather, and in it. She seems to be inside of it, the word itself. And I like her in those moments on OC as it airs. It's been edited. There's a flow to it. You juxtapose her with like fucking craziness elsewhere. And, you know, Vicky like in a room just watching and looking wild. But it feels like there's a purpose, and she adds a lot of zing, I'll say, not ding dong, but zing and chemistry and craziness and chaos. And that helped lift up this week into new heights. But that kind of energy works against her for me as a viewer when I watch What Happens, because the train for lack of a better term. Oh no, she's the conductor and we're all laying on the tracks. It veers so quickly off course that it's hard to like understand information. And because she was on with Meghan McCain, who I think had been trending on Twitter earlier that day for like walking off, or did she walk off, or whatever happened, yada yada, on The View. And because Meghan has made a lot of headlines and would likely be saying some things that would be used in the press after the episode, the live episode of Watch What Happens aired, it felt like Kelly's energy worked against her. And by against her, I mean against us. If I am almost feeling empathy for Meghan McCain for having to sit through that 22 hours plus commercials, there's a problem there. And Kelly thrives on attention, information, what she thinks of as comedy, these little jokes like the PhD thing. I mean, University of Spoiled Children, it was all that shit. And she doesn't have a filter. And that works really, really well on Housewives, because the editing room can filter out her lack of filter and make it work for the show. But on live TV, when she's just kind of rambling and inserting herself, it's hard to just like watch the show as a viewer watching the show. And if I had been a guest sitting next to her, P.S. is that going to happen? Oh my God, bravo. I don't know that I would have known necessarily how to handle that. I probably wouldn't have done what Meghan did, which was just like play confused, even though she certainly was, but just to be like really, really quiet. And Andy seemed like, if I was Andy, I would have been definitely annoyed, because like, shut the fuck up a little and stop swearing. And also, Kelly was referencing stuff that was great for me. This I super appreciated, but Andy definitely didn't. swearing and then bringing up the fact that, you know, it's kind of okay because there's a 3-second delay, but much more importantly, talking about things that production wouldn't allow to air, Tamra's enormous salary and what she's able to get away with, and the fact that the levels aren't even, and what she's paid to, she's doing what she was hired to do. He was not thrilled about that. And that was actually probably one of the better moments from the episode. That was when her inability to maintain consistent stability or something, if that makes any sense, in how she communicates. That's when it worked for us as far as like getting that little snippet of production. But otherwise, it was just a chaotic energy that made it like confusing for, it felt jarring. I got a little bit of whiplash during it and the after show. And I'm also one of those people that gets like severe secondhand anxiety when I feel embarrassed for somebody else. Cause I like that energy to me is like, oh my God, what's happening? And I felt that times a thousand with this. So maybe next time live to tape or something. I don't know how that works. Oh, TV production is fun. It was a lot. But so was this week of OC, and it was amazing. I'm going to start with something that may not have been as interesting to everybody else, but it was super fucking interesting to me. The Gina Emily fight is so layered, so fascinating. But I feel like both of their sides, I understand, like, the processing emotions that you've kept inside for the first time, feeling like a friend isn't there for your, the crazy shit when you're going through, that friend feeling like you don't understand what they're going through, miscommunicating, maybe some jealousy about other relationships and potentially superficial friendships, and the fact that you don't have, the fact that it seems like your friend is giving too much credit to people that weren't there for you in tougher moments. Gina feeling like, Emily, why aren't you more there for me? Not understanding that Emily is going through stuff and her process of going through it maybe isn't to be as open about it in the Shane stuff, but still, if you know, if you can like sense a temperature in the room, isn't great not really being there to support her. It was fascinating and felt so incredibly real. And these women are screaming at each other and they're crying and they're being, and they're both, they both seem kind of broken and angry at each other. But the reason they're angry is because they're hurt and turning inward. Can you see how therapy is helping me with this? It felt fascinating. It also felt fascinating that Tamra, the end of the episode was kind of funny to me. Because Tamra and Vicky could have shut the fuck up. But I think they both saw entry for weird dramatic conversation that they were going to turn on people. Tamra pretending to be angry at Emily for not inviting her to Vegas when the whole purpose of the Vegas trip was to be super vulnerable, and obviously she'd want to surround herself by people who she felt protected her and would make her feel protected. And Tamara's like, why wasn't I there? Well, sweetie, if it was a dinner party in OC, sure, you can make that argument. But like stripping in Vegas on a trip that was originally allegedly supposed to be with your husband, you can't really get pissed about that. And then Vicky saying her bullshit about we're not here to hurt each other, which is completely insane. Shout out to the editors this week. Phenomenal. And also for including all of those moments of Vicky quite literally looking to like hurt Kelly, which is the exact opposite of what she was trying to do. I mean, it leads into what looks like another exceptional episode. I mean, this week of OC was so good, and I had to like watch it and think to myself, do I like it because the bar is so low that it feels like something is happening? Or if I took this episode out of the OC franchise and put it in any other or in a world entirely of itself, like that, was it Sandra Bullock movie where she's like in space and like it's just her and like the moon or whatever? If I put it in its own little galaxy, world, sky, whatever, shout out to 16-year-olds with braids. Yay, go planet. If I put it into that world, would it stand on its own? And I have to say, I think it 100% would, like 100,000,000%, like as much money as Kelly has in her bank account plus a percentage word symbol thing. I just really felt like it was so powerful and so crazy and Looney Tunes, and is something that I will 100% watch again. So I want to share some long form satchels that you guys sent me.
I have a satchel about Kelly from Morgan in Maplewood, New Jersey. And Morgan says, watching the new OC and feeling my blood pressure rise, so I thought I'd share my thoughts. Kelly Dodd may be good for TV, but man, is she an awful person. She's incapable of having a grounded, mature conversation and taking ownership of her myriad inappropriate behaviors. She's either a walking dick and fart joke or a slobbering rage monster with very little to redeem her in between. I expect very little of my housewives, especially OC, and yet she's always manages to disappoint me. Is it just me or is she seeming more and more unhinged? I'll be very curious to hear your thoughts about her and tonight's episode on the podcast. Well, here we go, Morgan from Maplewood. My thoughts are, yeah, is she appearing more unhinged? Sure. She's getting more and more famous. She's had more time on the show. She's understood the power of being on a show like this and being celebrated for behaviors from seasons past. And she thinks that's going to give her ownership of everything forever and ever. Amen. She also wants attention. She also has no interest in understanding or feeling empathy for people in the moment if she feels like she's being attacked. Maybe Bronwyn was right in certain ways. I feel personally like Kelly is extremely reactionary, and as a protective mechanism or just because her personality works that way, she looks to for a response and acts out with terrible behavior, and that terrible behavior elicits a response, and then she explodes. She did that with Shannon. She did it with Kelly. She did it with Gina. And for Kelly to be like, I hit Shannon with the head with the mallet, but I didn't really, so I'm going to touch another person in the cast to show them how not a big deal it is, and then I'm going to make fun of the fact that Shannon went to the hospital because I knew she would, because I knew that if I touched her, she'd go get herself checked out, and look, she's getting herself checked out. Doesn't mean you, like, win a contest for knowing that you put your physical hands on someone. They said they didn't feel good as a result of that and went to the hospital as a precaution to check out. Also, P.S., I would think the production would want Shannon to get checked out completely because of, like, workers' comp and liability or whatever else, especially if it's like a head injury or whatever. And then get upset when that person says they need to get aid. Now, you can say it's bullshit that you went to get to the hospital and get checked out when you're drinking. And people have been floating on social media the video of Shannon saying that same argument against Vicky in Iceland about the, you know, if you really thought you were sick and you're like boozing it up, what the fuck are you doing? And I think there's merit to that. But the problem is this whole thing started because Kelly was not respecting this trip, not respecting feedback that she had already received about taking the trip seriously, and then got in someone's physical space. And you lose the argument the second you touch another person without their consent. BCC Michael Darby. It's just, you lose it. You lose it from that moment on. Consent is so important. And if you don't have it, go fuck yourself. She, I'm sure, understood that somewhere deep inside her soul, but just doesn't give a shit, and then gets angry at people who are angry at her for things that she herself has done. And for her to take that out on Gina and do the same shit, it's like, go fuck yourself. And then Kelly thinking that because Gina doesn't have a bajillion dollars, or because Gina chose to be, or whatever her, you know, choices were and the situation was in the dynamics of her marriage, that she stayed at home and took care of three fucking kids, and that isn't respected because she doesn't have money behind it, because she isn't paid to be a stay-at-home mom and a caregiver. That is a fucking job. That's no less of a job than being married to somebody with money. Like, great for Kelly if she says she went about her life the way Ramona did, where, like, you have $1 million before you're whatever the hell age you are. But also, you got, I'm guessing, a significant income from your divorce, because you've talked about it before. You've said it's maybe not enough to retire on, but it's a lot. And I'm guessing her millions of dollars probably also came from the sale of that house, which, P.S., she did not buy from herself, that beautiful beach house, which I would love to stay in, with the mirrored furniture. I loved it. So it's like, what are you doing? Why are you behaving this way? And also, thank you so much, because it was a magical episode. So, Morgan from wherever, Maplewood, New Jersey, you're right. She is, seems like she's becoming unhinged. I think it's 50-50 of she has always kind of behaved this way, but her behavior becomes more magnified and heightened as the show goes on. And we also know that she knows that she's aware of her celebrity and her fame, and it's going to increase when she acts out. And so she continues to. And I do think instinctively that Kelly does behave this way, and she's surrounded by people who are probably also party animals, who are probably fine with it or whatever, or used to it. And she doesn't really give a shit when people aren't. And she's also very angry when others try to give her advice, especially if their like checking account doesn't stand up to hers. I don't know. Here's another satchel about Kelly from Ben in San Antonio, Texas. Okay, this episode is the resurgence this franchise needed. Kelly motherfucking Dodd is doing the Lord's work this season, and bless her for that. I love Shannon until that venomous snake Tamra sunk her teeth into her. That whole concussion was bullshit. I honestly feel like that wasn't really a nurse. Oh, good point that I forgot to mention. The nurse sounded like perfectly mic'd up and clear to me. I feel it was a producer feeding that story. Also, if you had a concussion, mild or otherwise, the last thing you want to do is drink tequila, laugh, and party until 4:30. She wasn't hurt, and Kelly was right to call them both out on their bullshit the next day. I live for the shady edits of Shannon buying Kelly shots when they were in Ireland. Oh, I think I missed that. Also, Gina's desperation to want to be their friend is so pathetic to me. Okay, well, Gina was just like reaching out for anything, and that's what she found. So there we go with that. I don't know. I think her desperation came from like a human place. So I'm not going to judge her so much for that. Although I will save that for Emily, who probably deserves to judge her more than me. Yeah, Kelly fucking Dodd really killed it. She really delivered in a way that we really needed. The weird nurse conversation, I agree with. I actually wondered, the audio edit was obvious that the person speaking wasn't the person in the room, but I was trying to figure out why that happened, if it's because of like HIPAA laws or something that they can't describe that stuff on camera maybe, or they didn't get the consent from the nurse to sign on to have her audio used. Or they scripted it and edited in something else. I don't think the latter is realistic, because it seemed like whatever language was communicated in real time, it matched up with Shannon's responses and matched up with what they talked about after they left the hospital. So, or an urgent care, or whatever the fuck they were. So I don't know. I definitely there was some editing done with the nurse, but I don't know if it actually changed the story arc itself. Yeah, I really thought it was quality, classic, fantastic. And whatever, however you think about Kelly and did she go too far, and I did that as an IG poll, and the majority of you definitely think she did, it really delivered on so many levels. And the fact that there's so many viewers feeling differently, how dare Kelly, thank God for Kelly, it really goes to show you that like when you can have those kinds of conversations, and I feel like this week I'm having it with you guys out in the Bravosphere. When you feel that strongly, that is a good indicator that this was a really strong ep. I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the season. Next week looks good. But, you know, it's standing on its own feet was fantastic. Okay, I'm going to do one more satchel about Kelly, and then we've got to talk to Caroline Stanbury. Okay, Kelly Satchel from Nate in New York City. Hey, Sarah, love your podcast. Here's a few thoughts on OC. Kelly Dodd stays slaying these hosts. She's always been one of my favorite OC housewives because she's the only one I actually deem trustworthy. She says horrible things to her castmates and takes things too far, but it's almost always in reaction to the ladies taking advantage of her impulsivity. This season especially, I think Kelly is more a more seasoned housewife and completely aware that Tamra and Shannon are using her to create drama on camera and make her the villain. And it makes her furious, but she can't help but play into their game and ultimately give them what they are looking for because she wants to hurt them back so desperately. The show would be unwatchable without her. I think she's hilarious and real and doesn't have to work as hard as Tamra and Vicky and the new girls to be an asset to the show, even if she's unpredictable. Also, just love watching her put the Trace and Boyles in their place. So I agree with a lot of that, Nate, from New York City. With one exception that it feels like she says horrible things to her castmates, takes things too far. I do agree with that. Completely aware that Tamra and Shannon are using her to create drama on camera and make her the villain. It makes her furious. I would actually just put Vicky in there. I think the Tamara and Shannon stuff is going to come out more pointedly later on in this season. So in that sense, like Back to the Future style, you are correct. But I think just this episode specifically, the focus is more on Vicky, go fuck yourself. I know that you're using me on camera. Don't you dare talk about the fact that there shouldn't be a girl fight when I know that you're picking one with me and just pretending that you're not. But aside from that, great, great satchel. I got so many more responses from you guys that I'm going to respond to individually on my gram. Follow me at Dame Galley on IG, at Sarah Galley on Twitter. And guys, my God, I hope that I delivered with some appropriate recaps for this week because there was just so much going on. But we need to talk and listen to me talking and listening to Caroline Stanbury. I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to Caroline and her team for making it happen. A lot's discussed, and I also say some shit about PK that maybe I shouldn't have, but how? I couldn't help it. You guys, much like Kelly, it just needed to be said. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoy my little chat with my favorite Lady of London. Enjoy. You guys, I am so excited to be joined by none other than Lady of London, Bravo celebrity at the A++ level. Ooh, like, wow. We've jumped over A-list and now we're at perfection. It's like you, Waka, who else? It's just, it's a very small group of Bravo celebrities that I would say have passed over Bravo celebrity into a whole other universe. And so I'm so excited to be joined by none other than Lady of London, Woman of the World, Caroline Stanbury.
I don't even know how to come in from that. Wow, thank you.
I'm so excited. First off, thank you so much for flying from London specifically to be on Andy's Girls. That is so sweet, so generous.
Such a pleasure. Wouldn't miss it.
I couldn't. I'm so thrilled. So first off, what are you doing here in New York aside from being on AG?
Funnily enough, I am here in New York. I'm actually going to film a pilot for a show.
What show?
It's a new show, but I'm not going to say anything, but it's exciting. So we're doing our first one on, I'm actually flying to Vegas to shoot that on Monday.
Is it scripted or not?
Non-scripted.
Can you tell me the network?
No.
Is it a vowel?
No, it's not. It's not been picked up yet. So it was just with a production company that's been written, for me. But it's really exciting. And I think it's going to be really fun. And it's based on, you know, my reactions to things. I think that's why I was so popular, because everything is written over my face. Even with all this Botox, I still managed
to look phenomenal.
Thank you. And I'm also here recruiting. I work for an amazing healthcare group, the fourth largest healthcare group in the world, NMC, and I'm here bringing doctors back to the Middle East, believe it or not.
Oh my God. So how does that work?
Well, they freeze me in time. So like, yeah, it's true. So I find fabulous like plastic surgeons and I bring them back to the Middle East, because actually the Middle East is a great hub for things like this, because they have no paparazzi. They have amazing hospitals, places to recruit, and you can be left alone. So I was meant to be just the face of it, because as I, you know, hopefully as you can see, I don't really age.
You look amazing.
And actually it turned into a bigger job, and now I'm recruiting like American doctors to come back with it.
So how long have you lived in Dubai?
3 years now. It's just flown.
And do you go back and forth between Dubai and London? Because your family is still situated in London.
I mean, I used to go back more than I do now. I go back. I was going back at least once a month.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. But now also with Los Angeles, you know, I'm working and I've been actually putting things together. I've been waiting for the right show to come along. And the producers that I started working with now are people who have been trying to get me for over a year and a half, 2 years. So they're really into me. And I think more than anything, to have someone that's so passionate about you and they really believe in your brand.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that. Otherwise, I was, you know, I wasn't sure I was coming back for TV.
Well, that was one of my questions for you, of which I have between 5 and 1,000. How long has it been since Ladies of London went off the air?
I think it's been off 3 years, 3.5.
I would think during that time you fielded a lot of offers, because you were quite literally just the break. I mean, it's like historical fact at this point. You were the breakout star of that show.
I have, yes and no. It's not as easy as you'd think to get back on TV. I have signed a few production companies before, but you know, the TV world, it's very difficult right now. And Housewives is such a big brand. It's mm-hmm. quite, you know, once you're in it, you know, it's sort of hard to sort of take yourself out of that, you know, being pigeonholed as a housewife, which, you know, look, I love the Housewives. It's something that, you know, I don't have any regrets. I loved every minute of it. And it's, definitely given me the platform to be able to do what I do now. But, you know, so it's not, even though I really do feel loved and I felt really loved even by the network and everything, you'd be surprised. It's not like people were beating down the door to redo more TV. It just doesn't work like that anymore.
It's interesting that you bring up the Housewives, because when I think of Ladies of London, and I know that they've done Housewife iterations abroad, there was Real Housewives of Cheshire. It wasn't so much for me. When I think of Ladies of London, I think it's the Real Housewives of London. It feels like a housewife style show. Is that what was pitched to you? Did you think you were going to have that name backing you, or was it pitched as an entirely different kind of experience?
Well, when it started, it wasn't pitched as a housewife show, but it definitely became that. And obviously, when Bravo took it and picked it up, it definitely was, you know, it was a housewife show. We should have probably called it a housewife show at the time. I can't actually remember. I wasn't involved. It was an English company that actually wrote it and did it. But you know, the Housewives brand is so big, and I think most people that loved it or love it still do think of it as a housewife show. But I think it was pitched more of a, like a lifestyle of like London, and you know, as we all know, especially now with Meghan Markle and the baby and all this kind of stuff. I mean, Americans love everything British anyway. And I think what everyone liked, you know, I think I did so well at this point. I don't think there was anything that I could have done wrong if I said it in this accent. I could have, you know, performed a drive-by shooting and people have gone, oh my God, there she goes. So, you know, I was really lucky. And, you know, I don't think you can ever prepare yourself or, you know, to be a breakout star, because you don't know what people are looking for. I'd never been on TV. I'd never, like, won anything. I really wasn't expecting it. I sort of thought I'd last a season and be out. As I said, it was a great, great platform for me, and I've really enjoyed doing it. And I love the network's amazing, and they're super good to me. And if something else came along, great. But you know, all these kind of shows, you know how authentic they have to be. I don't live in any of these cities, so I think if I lived here, I could probably be on one of them.
Right.
But you know, when they do this show, they don't like people to move for the show and for it to be inauthentic that way. But, you know, I mean, the one that would make most sense to me, I suppose, is probably New York, because I know all the girls so well.
Speaking of knowing all the girls, so your social media saw you living your best life in New York City with none other than Real Housewife of New York, Dorinda Mendeley. How did you guys become such good friends?
I'm actually, Ramona texted me as well today.
How is Ramona?
She just literally replied. She wanted to do something tonight, but I haven't seen her yet. Dorinda has been a friend for a few years. Dorinda is one of the most generous women I know. Like, she really is. Like, when I first met her, I wasn't sure how if we get on or whatever. And I can't remember who introduced me. Someone in London was very close. She knows a lot of my friends. And she was so generous. She's like, oh my God, I love your fashion sense. I love this. She was so sweet about me. And we sat down, we just started talking, and I don't think we ever stopped. And actually, you know, I think with these shows, as I think you all know, as much as the good part of your personality is highlighted, they also really highlight the worst parts of your personality. But, you know, these are, or your character, and sometimes, you know, you ride crests in these shows, and she's had a tough time and she's had a great time, you know, and I think right now, as far as she's pretty much the breakout star of
yeah,
of
she's show. Definitely, she definitely sort of reinvigorated.
But, yeah, she yeah. has. And I, you know, like 2 years ago, I think it was, I remember calling her going, oh my God, what are you doing? You know, and, mm-hmm. and look at her now. So, you know, but we're very open and frank with each other. I think that's what she likes about me and I like about her. Like, there's no BS. You know, I can tell her, like, what were you thinking?
And she'll be like, I wasn't, you know, and it is that simple. So why do I like her? I think she's probably very like me, you know, she makes mistakes, she gets back up, she dusts herself down and she's like, okay, well, let's do this again.
Are you able to talk with her, I would think, in a way that other people aren't, because you've both been through the experience of being on a non-scripted show on the same exact network?
100%. And that's why I can call her up and go, you know, what were you thinking in this moment when you did that? Like, why would you do that on a screen? And then she'll go like this. She goes, you know what it's like. You get tired. You don't know, you know, you forget the camera's there. This, you know, we all make mistakes. Very hard to keep your mouth shut 24/7 when you're filming, because what people don't understand is you're on camera every day, all day, and you're exhausted. And, you know, things do come out, which is the aim of the game too. It'd be boring if we didn't. But, you know, they can, it's a difficult, it's a fine line, especially when we've got kids, we've got families, you know, it's scary. We have a lot to bond over with having been through that. You know, I've said things I regretted on the show. We've all done things that we regretted on the show, you know. And as I said, it's very hard to watch those things back quite a few months later, relive them, you know, there, you know, and then pull yourself out. And as I said, if anyone has managed to pull herself and bring herself to the top of her game this year, she's killing it.
Do you know anything about this alleged breakup on a break situation with her and John Medesian?
That's something for her to talk about. I don't want to talk about her
personal.
Personal life. But you know, they were both friends of mine. They are both friends of mine. I don't know. I've only seen her for 2 minutes, so I haven't really had the chance to ask her about that kind of stuff.
Speaking a little bit about having to kind of relive experiences that you wish maybe hadn't been caught by the cameras, was there ever a moment during filming where you said to production, "Is there any way for us to like maybe not air this?"
No, I've never asked them, because I know what the answer would be anyway. And the thing is, if you highlight it, it's going to make it to the top. So,
right. They're like, this very really good. This makes you uncomfortable? Yeah, okay, great. Let's talk about this for about 17 hours.
Exactly. So, you know, I understood that, you know, what I felt got anxiety over, unless I really pointed it out, it's a minute of a second of that you would pick up or not, and it's over. But if you go to the network or to go to a producer and say, oh my God, then it becomes a huge storyline.
It feels like a little bit of a gamble when you sign on to do reality TV, and especially in your case. I mean, I would say that you were, correct me if I'm wrong, like a semi-public figure. You weren't necessarily on that kind of show before, and you had, you know, the glory of choosing selectively when you wanted to kind of be in the spotlight in the public arena versus not. Those are some of my blonde hairs on my microphone that Caroline Stanbury is very nicely adjusting. So for you making that transition, and especially when Sophie joined the cast and having to talk about things where, listen, it's one thing to like get in an argument with a friend. It's another thing to get into an argument with a family member, because you know in the back of your head, one day this is going to air and you might get a call from your parents. You might get a call from your brother. What was that like filming a show with your former sister-in-law who had and potentially still is a close member of your circle?
Well, I mean, she is a very close friend of mine now. And it was difficult because we didn't speak to each other for quite a while. But we're really close now. And I think in hindsight, what I've understood, and if you look at the casts on the other shows, none of them are, I don't think they have family members like that.
Yeah,
they had Kyle.
Right, Kyle, and then Jersey has had a few different shades of cousins and so on.
So I had, Ladies of London was very much a group of my friends.
Yeah.
And if ever there was a room full of women that had any, you know, skeletons or buttons to push, you know, the thing about family is it's different. A friend can pick at you, but a family knows exactly where to hit you, where it hurts.
Right.
And so I think in hindsight, you know, I did it because, you know, she really wanted the show, and you know, she has young kids, and it was something that I thought would help everybody. In hindsight, I would never do it again with a family member ever. But look, these shows are as great fun as they are, and I had some amazing experiences. Like, it's like being in boarding school. I don't think, you know, it's like you look back or giving birth. At the time, you're like, I'm never doing this again. And then afterwards, you know, you're like, oh, I'll have another one. So, you know, I enjoyed, there are parts that I will never, ever forget, like the trips and we had bonding and so much fun. And then other parts I was like, oh my God, I mean, like the worst experience of my life. But I mean, not literally my life, that's pushing it. But you know what I mean? It's just, it's a real roller coaster. But overall, you can look at it and then say, okay, this was a blast. Like, I did it. I did it. I ticked it. You know, I did it well. I really enjoyed it. And look, 3 years on, I'm still very much recognized and loved for it. And, you know, that's really, really nice. As I said, you can't plan for that. My sister-in-law and I are back to where we were and better, and she regrets very much what happened on that show. And I think when you're in it, it's very hard to see it, and you've got people feeding you things, you know, and telling you different things, and you know, it gets prolonged. Whereas in real life, we could sort it out a little bit quicker. But it's, you know, no harm done now, and you know, it's over. So.
You talked a little bit about the difference between family being on the show versus friends. Then you had people that it seemed like you had such a close relationship, they might as well have been family, like Adela. What's your relationship like with Adela and also the other members of the cast since the show's been off the air? Do you stay in touch with
anyone?
Juliet.
Yeah. I see. I just saw her now in London. I have a great relationship with Juliet. You know, I mean, we fight. We're like sisters. We can fight and make up, you know, Juliet can test the patience of a saint, frankly. But, you know, at the end of the day, she's you know, not got a bad bone in her body. She's just like an overexcited puppy about life. And I kind of love that, and you know, as well. Adela, I haven't spoken to.
Really?
No, I speak to, I've seen Luke. Adela was difficult. You know, we have a fractious relationship. I think the show highlighted everything. Again, she wanted to come on the show very clearly, very much.
Right.
And I just didn't like the way it went from the beginning. She knows that. There's no, you know, I don't have any ill will to her. It's just we're in different places. Luke came here just now.
He's with Dorinda now, right?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes. She looks effing. I mean, we swear. She looks fucking amazing.
She does.
She really looks so good.
Like I said, she's got to take him everywhere. I mean, Dorinda's like less precious than me. She also believes in why, you know, she's good like that. Like that people should see what she looks like with and without makeup, which is great. But I mean, you know, Luke can transform anyone. It's insane. He did this one of me, which is like roadkill to red carpet.
Oh my God.
Never let that picture come out. It'll be out.
Magical.
But I mean, honestly, if that picture came out, the man would be a living legend. But no, Dorinda, she looks amazing when he does it. Amazing. In fact, she's somehow morphed into me. It's hilarious.
She looks, I mean,
as soon as he does it,
she's got that glow.
Yeah. But no, it's great. And he loves working with Dorinda and they have a really, really close relationship. And the thing about Luke, he's not just a makeup artist and hair guy, you know, he ends up being your family, traveled everywhere with me. So I'm really happy. She deserves it. And it's nice if you're, you know, I don't know, if you're living on your own, it's nice to have doesn't everyone have a gay best friend?
Of course. Yeah. You got to have your team. You got to have your crew.
Have your team, yeah.
It was great to see that relationship specifically with Luke on the show because it felt like he was definitely a confidant of yours, and certainly when there were moments of tension with the other women, it was nice to see if you felt like isolated that he was, you know, there for you.
I mean, I was very lucky because I always had my team with me where no one else did, but that was authentic to me. I didn't hire Luke for the show. Luke had been working for me for at least 6 years before that. So that relationship was real, which is why they allowed him.
Right.
You know what I mean? The other girls didn't get to have hair and makeup come with them because it wasn't like, you know, they didn't naturally travel with a glam squad. I always had Luke. So they let that one fly.
It's interesting to hear that because the glam squad thing as an activity, as sort of an example to viewers of one person's wealth, has become so important on certain franchises like Beverly Hills, Dorit's Glam Squad's constantly trying to keep up with Erica Jane's. I mean, it's fascinating.
I think I probably was one of the first to bring the glam squad.
Yeah, I think you were.
And then I saw Erica Jane's. Look, I presume Erica Jane, with her show, she must have, with being a singer, I presume she's always had one too.
I think so.
Dorit, I have no idea. But Erica Jane, I presume, had one in residency. I literally, I didn't make it up because I wanted to, like, you know, prove to everyone I was doing so well. It's just literally, I had an internet company before. I was, you know, doing so many shoots and things like this. And when I traveled, I was doing stuff for press. So it just made sense to have him with me. It was actually cheaper than hiring, you know, I don't like to use new people. When you get to a new set, you're doing a photo shoot. Who wants to meet a whole new set of people when you arrive? I mean, it's a nightmare. And we were so close that he would travel in my room. So it's, you know, there was no extra cost there for me. It was not a giant wealth thing. It was like, he was my best friend. He just made sure that I was at things on time. And I woke up in the morning and he was already in my bedroom doing my hair and makeup.
Phenomenal.
Then I didn't have to travel alone. So for me, it just made total sense. And as I said, Bravo let me have him because it was natural to me. I didn't just bring him on for the show. It wasn't a made up thing. Which I presume is what happens in Beverly Hills.
It becomes a little bit artificial. And then there are different women where it's like they have their glam squad, but it's like, do you really? I mean, like, how much of the salary that you're making goes into creating this facade?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, as I said, you know, because of the company I had before, it was my natural life. And my kid, you know, you saw my kids grow up with him.
Right.
He was very much a part of my family. You can't make that up. And we'd been together for quite a long time. And, I wouldn't just share my bed with, you know, a complete strange makeup artist.
Although that would be a great season four.
Well, that would be a great season four, but no. And my husband wasn't going to do my hair and makeup, I can assure you. I don't get lonely when I travel. But the other girls, as I said, I really don't know. You know, it makes sense that Erica Jane has a glam squad because that seems to be what she does
for a living.
Yeah, it's
a part of her thing. Yeah.
And I don't know what, I guess now Dorit has her swimwear line. So maybe, you know, her glam squad is off the charts. It's it's like different.
Speaking of Dorit, who is British-ish, she comes from the land of many places via her accent. Have you had any interaction with her? Haven't had the pleasure?
No.
Or PK?
PK I have.
Really?
I ran into him. Actually, where did I run into him? I ran into
the bank?
No, not the bank. I ran into...
You were making a deposit. He was making a withdrawal.
You're so awful. No. I ran into him twice in LA. Where? In waiting rooms, like, I think in either, like, meetings I was at. He was literally there. I've just seen him waved at each other. I mean, obviously, when you're on Bravo, we all kind of know each other. Mm-hmm. And everyone's super friendly. And so, yeah. Dorit has unreal style.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's dripping with everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm in Zara right now.
You look amazing. We'll take a little photo after. And the diamond I can't stop staring at. And I need to talk to you about your ear piercings. Because I feel like we go to the same place. If you go to do you go to Venus by Maria Tash? Your ears?
Oh, yes, I do. Yep. Yes,
recognized
yes.
it. I have I'm dripping.
Lois, you're dripping
I'm obsessed.
Too. Oh, they're so good.
They're
yeah.
so good. And I'm dead. Phenomenal. Yeah. Speaking of British Bravolebs, any moments throughout the years with LVP? Did you know her through?
I met her through the Hadids.
Because
she's best friends with them, and I've had dinner with her. And I actually went to Sir a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you know, she's always in there. Oh no, was it Pump? Pump maybe. She's in there at night. Mm-hmm. She's always been super lovely to me. And there's a few, she has a few mutual friends in common. I mean, we're not close, but I've had drinks with her before and we've had dinner. Super lovely. I'm sad she's gone.
I know. Well, she's gone-ish. She's still on Pump Rules. She quit Beverly Hills. Yeah. She's still on Pump Rules.
And I love that show too.
I'm guessing she'll have like a 2-season timeout and then come back to Beverly Hills. Which shows do you love to watch? Pump Rules is one of them.
I watch Vanderpump Rules. I love Beverly Hills. I mean, it's brutal. I couldn't do it. Everyone's like, you'd be so good on it. I'm like, no,
so
they'd eat me
it.
Alive.
No, they wouldn't. You could take them. Trust. They need a strong alpha right now.
Oh my God.
I see an entry for you.
Oh my God. What else do I love?
New York, Atlanta, Jersey, Below Deck.
I'm watching that. Below Deck's fun.
Blowtech's actually quite entertaining.
It is quite entertaining. I always feel sorry, actually, for the people chartering the boat.
Yeah, no one wants to be third stew.
Not really.
Oh, yeah, and the guests.
Yes, the guests. I'm like, why? Why would you do this?
I feel like there's not a discount big enough because you're giving such a big cash tip that it's like, why are you doing this? You know they're going to talk shit about you.
Totally. I'm the like, whole time. I've just paid and I'm going to like be on. Actually, I got an email asking if I wanted to take the boat. I'm like, no.
Which boat situation team would it have been? Below Deck Med with Captain Sandy or Below Deck with Captain Lee?
Med, I think.
Oh, with Hannah instead of Kate.
But I love Captain Sandy.
Isn't she great?
Yes. But it's brutal on that show too. I mean, it's hardcore. They really work hard, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But they're geniuses when they lay the table. I mean, it's
gotta love a tablescape.
And actually, that chef, the chef, below deck chef, he needs like a medal.
Ben.
He can make something out of absolutely nothing. I need Ben to come to my kitchen and just cook for me all the time.
Love it.
Like I look in a fridge and I see an empty fridge. That man just pulls out. I mean, I don't know how he does it.
I love that you still watch Bravo shows. I have to ask you a question about Beverly Hills. As a Beverly Hills fan and someone who also knows the cast, where do you stand in Puppygate? LVP or Team Everyone Else?
Puppygate really doesn't interest me. Is that bad?
Really?
No, I was sick of Puppygate.
It went on. Loved it because they were like closing the fourth wall, bringing in the idea of people leaking stories to gossip. Yeah, because I feel like that is something that people reference, but they tried to kind of disguise it. This time it was abundantly clear what they were talking about. And I liked the use of like talking a little bit more about production at this point, you know, because they're a million seasons in.
Yeah, I do feel like, I mean, the puppy thing, like it's maybe she should have got the puppy back.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if it didn't work out. But, you know, because I know how these things work, I just felt drained by the whole puppy gate. I was like, okay. I actually felt uncomfortable at the end. I felt uncomfortable because for me, Lisa has been such a big part of Beverly Hills for so many years. I really felt that she was, she didn't stand a chance. I felt like she's been very ganged up on the last few seasons. So, I mean, even if I, you know, take my feelings, whether I like her or don't like her out of it, I just don't like to watch a whole group of women go after one.
Does it trigger for you? Like, can you watch these shows and have them be purely escapist, or does it bring up for you memories of feeling that way?
No, it's escapist, but I do remember it because the same thing happened to me. I think when you've been at the top of a show for so long, eventually, you know, it's like anything, you know, it either has to change because for a reasoning, as in the production may not, the network may not want you to be at the top anymore, or production may not, or the girls just get sick of like all the interviews being about you. That's what happened to me. You know, if you get to go on a show, everybody wants to go on a show and go and do an interview. And if they keep asking the same person, it would annoy me too. So I understand why these things happen and it's sort of like a takeover.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember very clearly how isolating it feels and how, you know, it's really hard to keep it together when you know you're walking into a barrage of women, rightly or wrongly, whether she did the right thing or didn't do the right thing. I don't know. And I didn't think that much. I found watching all the girls go on a trip without her, or two trips without her, dinners without her, and she was the only one not there, that I've just felt sad. That reminded me of how I felt, definitely.
Working with women that you might not socialize with ordinarily, how did that feel when it seemed like a lot of the episodes were who's friends with whom? Can you get this person on your side? Why are we fighting? Like, I just think of Mapperton, you know, like Lovely Julie. It didn't feel like there was a natural kinship between the two of you. Did it ever feel exhausting that you were sort of having to film with people that you might not ordinarily have in your social circle?
I mean, funnily enough, Julie...
Are you guys best friends now?
We're not best friends, but we are friends. And if I do go to London, funnily enough, she is one that really always reaches out and says, can we have dinner? Can we have coffee?
Really?
Absolutely. And I'll give her that. Like, I like her so much more now that she's not on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Julie, I felt she irritated me a lot on the show. And I've said this to her face. And we laugh about all of it now because, as I said, the funny thing is I do go and have drinks with her, and I actually am super proud of what she's achieving right now off the show, because I mean, she's probably the one that's killing it the most. And it's not easy to do what Julie does, you know, cycling around on her little bicycle and fixing Mafton.
Doing yoga in the grounds.
Doing yoga in the grounds. Now, God bless her. But yes, I did find it exhausting because, you know, Julie and I didn't naturally gravitate together. Now that that's taken away, we have much more in common, and we can bond over certain things that we want to. But, you know, Julie was doing what she needed to do, and you know, she wasn't my friend, so she didn't have any alliance to me. She didn't have any, you know, feelings towards me, and you know, she could take me or leave me. And at that point, we probably could have left each other quite easily. And we wanted, you know, I didn't want to stay in her house. I would never normally have stayed in somebody's house that I didn't like. So that, of course, you're already on the back foot because I'm taking her hospitality. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be there that weekend at all. But I'm sure she didn't really want me there either.
I mean, the rules were a lot.
The rules were ridiculous. I mean, I've just never heard anyone give you rules before you've arrived.
Especially anywhere. At the start of a sort of vacation.
It puts you on edge already. And, you know, but that is, those rules actually do apply in day-to-day life. They weren't made up for the show. She actually thinks that's the normal way. But again, you know, each to their own. I would not have been a natural house guest for Julie. I don't care about staying in giant mansions. I'd rather go and stay in a motel and have no rules.
So I was rewatching season 3. Yes. It felt like each season was building upon each other. In season 3, there was a crackle to it. I loved actually the casting, the mix, the divide bringing together of like the Brits and the Americans and how everyone's interacting with each other. And I was watching, I think it was the episode where you guys go to East London and you're having your little drinks and you're having fun. And Sophie's in a cab and she's like, let's call Prince Harry. And she calls up your brother and he's like, cool. And she literally calls up Prince Harry, whose audio isn't used for obvious reasons. Do you have any interaction with the royal family? This is me being like genuine American, Googling Meghan Markle's everything every day of the week.
So cute. I don't know Prince Harry, but that was for me. I was like, oh my God, she didn't just do that. look, England's small. We all grew up together. I'm very close to Sarah and Beatrice, and you know, but do I have an interest? Like everybody, if you're, it's not nothing special. They're special. I love them, but it's for us. It's normal. I know for you guys, it's not. God,
we love a princess.
Well, of course, and they love it here. You know, I love the royal family. I love that we have that. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the culture. I love seeing the all the pomp and ceremony that we have, you know, I really enjoy it. And I love that you guys celebrate it so much. And they feel so loved here, and that everybody wants to come here and hang out. And the Americans are so non-judgmental, and they just celebrate, all of them. So, yeah, I mean, we're very lucky to have them, really enjoy it. Sophie, you know, look, has my brother, I don't know. She's just, I don't even know what to say about that scene. I died inside.
It was amazing. It was also like, is this happening? Is this you really being drunk? Or is this you like knowing that this is going to get a shit ton of attention? Which was, P.S. No. I was obsessed with it.
She woke up dying. Like, she was she wasted. Really,
oh my God. No, I love her even more.
Everybody loves her. Like Sophie Wasted is the most fun thing ever. But yeah, she has... She's one of those things. You ever seen that movie Very Bad Things? It's like, you know,
oh yeah,
it's like a ton of things just happen and you're like, oh,
that
you
are truly very bad,
truly very bad. But it's funny, it's people know her so well, they truly love her. Nobody, you know, she doesn't really get into that much trouble in the end. She's never been arrested, so that's good, isn't it?
I mean, it's a good place to start. There, I see a spinoff happening. I would love it. Do you have any advice for Her Holiness Meghan Markle as she makes her way through the British tabloids and tries to stay sane?
I know. I mean, stay humble, stay strong, I guess. It's hard. It's hard to navigate that if you haven't been in it. But I think key is just staying humble, staying true to yourself, staying, you know, approachable, you know, and doing as they have for so long. You know, although they've all grown up in such a spotlight, if you meet any of the, you know, immediate royals, they're so friendly and so humble and so kind. And as long as she stays that way and, you know, they look so happy. I mean, I'm talking from a pure, I've never met either of them. So
I just heard that you're best friends. Just
did
now.
You? Yeah. Oh, I went, okay, well, maybe one day.
There we go.
But I think, you know, look, she's gorgeous. She makes great headlines and I love her fashion. So isn't that good?
So
I think
good.
She's going to lift the country like that and people love it. And, you know, with her and Kate, we've got two gorgeous princesses, don't we?
I mean, yeah. Lucky you.
I know, really lucky us. It's great because they're so different. It's quite fun. I enjoy looking at pictures of both of them and what they're wearing. And don't we all?
And it's like, they're so totally different, which so is totally so different. Good. So if you're looking for a certain kind of princess one day and a certain kind the next, you've got it covered. You guys are very smart.
Like, you know, one's more Hollywood and one's more sort of home counties, but gorgeous.
Yeah.
She's just, you know, it's very different. I think we're very lucky.
So I have to ask you, you know, as I've said, I look at Ladies of London as a housewife style show. If you were on The Housewives of London or just living your everyday life, what would your Real Housewife tagline be?
Oh, my God. What my?
I see it. My favorite that I've used, you know, this is episode 125 of Andy's Girls, believe it or not. And so I've done 100,000 of these taglines over the years. We start every episode with a tagline. And my favorite tagline of all time is I see life through rose colored glasses. It's just
mine
like a little example.
Would probably be yes. My famous line, which is, I'm not here for your amusement, you're here for mine.
Magical.
I mean, I don't even know where that came from, but I think that has to be my
deep
line.
Within.
Deep within. It's true.
If that is not the spirit animal of everyone's life,
right?
I don't know what to tell you.
And kind of. So, yeah, I think that's one of my most famous lines and the ones that people love so much that would have to be my tagline.
Well, I'm obsessed with you, Caroline Stanberry. You're absolutely magical. Tell the people where to follow you on social media, pretending that they don't already, which they 1,000% do.
You're so lovely. If you don't follow me at Caroline Stanberry on Instagram. And it's quite a ride.
And I heard sources told mm-hmm. me, because, you know, here at Andy's Girls, we're just plugged right into Bravo HQ. A little birdie told me something about potentially a tour of some kind.
Oh, yes. January. So January, I will be touring according to Caroline.
Oh, my God.
And it's going to be according to Caroline, leave your husbands at home, girls. Get dressed up. So it's predominantly for, you know, women and gay men. And
yes.
It's a girls' night out. And I wanted it to be, it's sort of women's empowerment, but with, you know, a bit of comedy. And we're all going to talk about the stuff that we want to say, but we don't really have the guts to say. And we feel. And it's like an open space that, you know, I talk about my life and how I got to where I am and the things that have gone a lot wrong on the way. But, you know, how each turn has really brought me to a better space. We talk about sex, marriage, work, life beginning at 40. And it truly does. And everything. Like, it's really, really fun. And that's why I wanted it to be gay men and women. Yeah.
And are you touring throughout the world?
No, just I'm doing 5 cities, 8 days in America.
Oh, all in America?
Yeah.
Wait, which cities? New York, New York, New York, New York, Brooklyn?
I think I have 2 nights in New York. I'm doing the Gramercy, I think.
Upper West Side,
Washington.
Okay.
I want to say Dallas or Chicago. I can't, you know what, I'm
New York and everywhere else.
Yes.
So if you go to CarolineStanberry.com, you can get all of the information and following you on Instagram at CarolineStanberry.com.
But just Caroline Stanberry, and watch out for According to Caroline, because I'm definitely coming.
Oh my God. When you are in New York, I will be front row.
I want you to be front row. Please come.
So
you will be
excited.
My guest.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to be with you on that stage. Just like just crying and laughing and being with all of our community.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Caroline, this has been a total pleasure. I have to thank you so much. You are just as wonderful as I hoped and dreamed for. And
thank you so much
I can't wait to kiki with you again soon.
Definitely. Well, I will see you in According to Caroline.
Yes. Cheers.
Thank
Cheerio.
You. Bye.
Bye. Okay. She not amazing. I mean, my God, it was such a pleasure. First off, Caroline Stanberry, fucking incredible looking IRL, as is evident by the fact that we've like seen her on TV and she's beautiful, but she just has that celebrity glow. She has the glow of a woman in charge of her life with a shit ton of money who looks amazing, is very, very open, very friendly, but in like a fun, interesting British way, which is really, you know, creative for us Americans to see. She just feels and looks
like a star. And I need to see her back on TV ASAP. So I'm hopeful, fingers crossed, that the show that she was talking about takes off. I would love to see her back on Bravo specifically. I think she's a great character for Bravo. I think she's a great personality for Bravo. And one would think that they would find a way for her to be back on the show in some form. And I can't wait to go to her tour, guys. More info will be on her website as dates are announced. It sounds like they're still figuring out the dates and locations, but certainly for those of us who live in New York City and wherever the fuck else you live, just come on here to Manhattan and, you know, take a seat at the Beacon Theater on the Upper West Side and let's have some laughs. I think it's going to be really good. It also reminded me, remember when Bethany went on her tour? Was it on Housewives or her spinoff? I think when she did her talking tour, it was definitely to pre-hype her show on Ellen and like show that she could be a host. I think it was on her spinoff on Bethany Ever After. But it reminded me a little bit of that. Like she sort of reminds me of Bethany in certain ways of just being very unique, very much an individual, in control of herself, assertive, smart, quick, funny, all of that. And so I think that, you know, I think the tour will be a slam dunk. I can't wait to see it. I am appreciative of the fact that, you know, knowing I had this interview with Caroline, you know, IRL, sitting down with her in a weird office space in her very fancy hotel, which was, you know, lovely of them to offer to us. And, you know, I very much appreciate it. So thanks, guys. But just talking to her in real life and knowing that I had this episode with her coming up, it propelled me to rewatch Ladies of London, which I knew I loved. But just watching those episodes, honestly, you can start with season two. You can start with season one. You can go straight to season three. You'll understand the characters pretty quickly. I was completely shocked that she stays in touch and on friendly terms with Julie based on how season three goes, mostly the middle of it. And really impressed that Julie has accomplished all she's done with Mapperton, with those yoga poses, downward dog in front of a chateau or whatever. Who doesn't want a child's pose in front of a castle? I mean, I actually kind of do. And the fact that she stayed in touch with the people she has and the relationships she has with New York housewives, Beverly Hill housewives and housewives and house husbands. I mean, you know, she has relationships with these people. Luke is now working for Dorinda. She went to drinks with Dorinda the night before. Ramona was texting her right before our interview started. I just really feel like all the signs are there for her to come back. It's hard because she does live in London and there isn't a Bravo show airing there currently. And from what I've understood about Ladies of London, one of the reasons it was canceled was because of the high cost of production, which makes sense filming there. But hopefully we'll see her on our screens more real soon. It sounds like we will. So thanks to Caroline and her amazing team. Thanks to all of you for listening to this week's episode. Follow Caroline on all of her social media. I'm going to put up a video of us and me saying some dumb shit on my Instagram. So that'll be a fun exclusive for you guys. Follow Caroline on her IG. Follow me on mine. We have some amazing episodes and new, fun, exciting guests coming up, as well as some Bravo Labs on the books. So keep it on here at Andy's Girls. Like the show? That made me. Adela, the name of your favorite housewife. Just for fun. You know, guys, such a crazy week. And thank you for being here along for the ride. And can't wait to kick you with you guys again soon. Bye-bye.